In Pakistan now, you can be disappeared.
I wonder if any of these people who live here know anything about what happened that day.
I heard the sounds of a woman screaming. They led me to believe was my wife being tortured next door.
We've endured a nightmarish experience that no human being should ever be put through.
It's important for Americans and others across the world to understand the kind of people held at Guantanamo.
Don't go. Don't go to somewhere that was so dangerous for you before, where the world has not changed and there's still danger.
When I realized Americans were present, I knew that this is something completely at a different level. I never believed for one minute that I could be held in the way that I did. When I was handed over to the Americans, only at this point did I begin to feel despair. There is no way out of it. This is all a response to September the 11th, and these people have gone crazy. They've gone mad.
Many of these decisions were motivated by a sincere desire to protect the Americans.
I believe this was not an act of desperation. Rather, an act of asymmetric warfare waged against us.
There wouldn't be any doubt. The rules of the game are changing.
Be involved in torture or conspiracy.
We do not torture.
And we do not render to countries that torture. That has been
that
our
there
policy.
Were CIA express rights into the territory of Poland.
Even in a case where an enemy combatant might be acquitted, the United States would be irresponsible not to continue to detain them until the conflict is over.
The war on terror will be ongoing until the day that we
A small win. Number of suspected terrorist leaders and operatives captured during the war have been held and questioned outside the United States. We will not falter, and we will not fail.
I've had calls from Moisen before at airports or before or after he's been stopped since he came back from Guantanamo. I also had a call from his father within hours of Moisen being kidnapped in Pakistan in 2001. Anything could happen. My advice would have been, of course, don't go. Don't go to somewhere that was so dangerous for you before, where the world has not changed and there's still danger. His family, for the first months of his kidnap there, took action in the courts in Pakistan, habeas corpus, and every single ministry put in an affidavit denying they knew anything about his having been captured. So what happened to him wasn't subject to any external inquiry or supervision. He just disappeared. And if he did then, he could do so again.
I was worried about him going back to where we, you know, initially left each other without saying goodbye. I was worried because I thought to myself, you know, all these bad things are going to go back into his head, where, you know, how they grabbed him from the house and how they made him kneel down and handcuffed him and put a gun to his head. And, you know, I didn't see any of that, but he told me about it. And I just thought, you know, it's going to go back and he's going to remember all these horrible things that happened in that house.
My father in particular, he's not happy at the idea of me going. He thinks that it's unsafe. He thinks that because of me, the person, the character, and the baggage that goes with being a former Guantanamo prisoner could make it unsafe.
I was very much worried about his safety. I was not very happy that he was going to Pakistan because of the simple reason that he was not treated right in Pakistan, and I had all my fear that he might again get into trouble.
Moisen is obviously a very chatty, very talkative person,
I remember when he was about to land in Islamabad, suddenly you could see Muazzam feeling the emotion of coming back to the place where he was kidnapped from, a place where he had actually called home, wanted to settle down as home from once he had left Afghanistan. And it was particularly emotional for him, as he told me, because he had a non-Pakistani wife who he had persuaded to settle down in Pakistan with him, saying that the people of Pakistan are very generous, very hospitable. Then, of course, the experience that he went through. And it's all these thoughts, I think, that were going through his mind, and also the longing that he originally, the plans originally had to settle down here with his family, and how they were shattered by the actions of the Pakistani security services. Along with that, and just a general sort of a reaction of coming to back home, really, I think was a very, very interesting spectacle for me to watch.
One of the thoughts that was going through my mind, being in an airplane now descending into Islamabad airport as opposed to the one that I was on last time when I was in Islamabad, was my first encounter with US soldiers. And that was on the plane that I was put onto the C-130 transport, military transport plane, put onto the floor of the plane with my legs shackled, my hands shackled behind my back, a hood placed over my head, and a strap across them. I realized that there was somebody to the left of me, another prisoner of Libyan origin. And at this point, despite the flashes of the what were evidently American soldiers taking trophy pictures, which I could still see despite the hood, an American soldier had heard me speaking to the person to my left, and he came over and put a knife to my throat. The person to my left, in fact, had said to me, "Brother, it's time for prayer. The time for prayer has come. Shall we pray?" The American soldier said to me that if you speak again, I'll slit your throat. At this point, the person on the left to me said, "Allahu Akbar," and he raised his hands in the traditional Muslim way of prayer. And that's how we and I performed my first prayer in American custody. وبللت قبري بها في خشوع فأوقد لنا من رفات الشموع. I always say to my husband before he leaves the house, I always make sure that he's happy with me and I'm happy with him, and I always ask him to forgive me and he does the same, because then maybe I'll not see him again. That's what we always do when he goes anywhere, and that, you know, we ask each other to forgive each other. You know, I just let him go and I say, "Don't forget to make du'as for me and the kids," and, you know, off he goes. In Pakistan now, you can be disappeared, and there is no law, and there is no one to complain to. And as a result of this, Pakistan and its policy of accepting and allowing drone attacks up in the northwest is no longer safe. The last time I was here, I was with my wife and children, and I didn't see them ever again for the next 3 years. And Pakistan was a place we could happily have lived had there been some honesty, some security, some justice.
Well, there's lots of security now.
Yes, a different sort of security now. It's quite bizarre to see Pakistan like this, to see soldiers everywhere, bomb blast barricades, to see clearly that safety, if they thought that they were protecting Pakistan with the policies that they used, which handed people like me and others over, what's happened now is that they have reaped a whirlwind. Thank you.
I'm sure this is the place where I, the shopping market where I used to come to.
Are we getting near?
Yeah, we're very close. Yeah, I remember this station. That's the road. That's the mosque I used to pray. Yeah, that's where I had my short alchemies made, that down there.
Can you remember the house number?
Yeah, I can't remember the number, but I remember what it looks like. Uh-huh. And I remember exactly where it is. Yes, I remember this park, definitely. The house is back there. That one there. It was next to an opening space. They parked one car there. They opened the gate. They drove in another car into there so that nobody would actually see me taken out of the house. They closed the doors, put me onto the ground, and bundled me into the vehicle there.
How are you feeling now?
I like the weather. Yeah. Feeling like the weather. I wonder if any of these people who live here know anything about what happened that day.
I saw a Pakistani man dressed in uniform with a Kalashnikov in his hand. And I thought, they're just raiding the house, they'll just check the house out and then, you know, they'll let him go. But it wasn't like that.
You'd have to twist this, twist it, open it, open the door. You can actually hear the squeak of the door. And it's actually the same colour. I thought it was the place next door, but it's actually the same colour as it was. It hasn't changed, the colour hasn't changed. And this is where I would have opened the door from. And that was it. They walk straight in, barge straight in, the gun goes straight to the head. Yeah. Yeah, right here. It's unbelievable. The first Red Cross message that I wrote to my wife was to this address. I'd assumed that she'd stayed here, and I'd hoped that I'd get released and still come back here. And one of the Pakistani agents, I told him to go to my house and to check if my wife was okay, and I was very worried about them. And he didn't go for a while, and then I think about two weeks later, he said he went to the door, knocked on it, nobody answered, and he realised that there was a padlock on it and they'd left and gone.
That night, I went straight away to Islamabad. I went to a school in Islamabad and I stayed there for 2 days, and they kept moving me from one place to another. Eventually, they sent me to Karachi and I stayed there for a whole month until I made arrangements for me to fly over to Muscat, Oman, where my brother is. And I went there. And then from there, I made my way to England. I think a month later, I realised that he's not going to come back. They told me that he's been handed over to the Americans. I was told that he's been handed over to the Americans, so I knew that he's not going to come back.
They lifted my hood in the vehicle, and I saw these two Americans, and I remember one clearly. He said to me, he was wearing an Afghan cap, and he said that he produced a pair of handcuffs. And he said, I was given these handcuffs by one of the wives of the victims of 9/11 to go and capture the perpetrators. And I said, well, wouldn't she think that you're an idiot for having caught the wrong person?
I have been very fortunate to come to know Mozambique. and regard him as a friend, a man who's out trying to help other people who were in a similar situation such as himself. Me and Mozam recently spoke at a large meeting at a university in London, and our cases are so similar. When Mozam heard about the Alsatian dogs being put in the cell on leashes and them jumping and putting their paws on my chest and the saliva dripping from their mouths onto my chest, Mozam was physically taken back by this. The treatment that we received at the hands of the British police, the British Special Branch, and I've no doubt the Secret Services, is reminiscent of what's happened to hundreds, if not thousands, of innocent people who've been caught up in this so-called war of terror, being abused, taken from their homes, flown to various parts of the world to be tortured. My case is exactly the same as the people who have been kidnapped in foreign countries and found themselves in a foreign prison in Guantanamo Bay. The burning desire to help other individuals who've been in a similar situation to himself, regardless of what may be thought of him.
And so we learned about the birth of our own sons through this manner, through the cells and through the cages of Guantanamo, through the whispers of soldiers who were not allowed to talk to us for fraternization with the enemy. And at least I, several years later, was released and was able to be reunited with my son. I saw him.
I saw people being stripped naked, being punched and kicked, being thrown into the toilet. I saw them rip the Quran and throw it into the place used for defecation and urination. I saw people being beaten to death while they were saying Allah, Allah. I saw some terrible abuses of human rights. I heard the sounds of a woman screaming, they led me to believe was my wife being tortured next door.
When I met with the family of Afia Siddiqui I told her mother in particular that I had experienced being separated from my own children, and I knew as a father what it's like to be separated from my children, and that for her as a mother, even though I'd experienced it, I felt that I couldn't imagine what she was going through, because there's a particular relationship that a mother has with her children. And being a father is one thing, but being a mother and separated from your children is an entirely different matter. And for her to be separated in this way, to have no closure, to know that the detaining authority in the same is in essence the same one, it's the same US government that held me and the same US government that is holding Afia Siddiqui. And I remember that those screams that I used to hear in Bagram of a woman led to Afia's case becoming, through the likes of Imran Khan, Yvonne Ridley, through the likes of ordinary people, one that ignited a nation. My most prized possession in Guantanamo and out of Guantanamo has been my Quran that was my companion during my years held there. I remember just recently my wife, she picked up the Quran. We've got many Qurans that look similar, and she put it somewhere, and I was looking frantically for this Quran. Where is it? I said, please don't keep that out of my sight or my awareness, because that was my companion. You can't understand what that means to me. For me, in Guantanamo, everything's unfamiliar. People are unfamiliar, their language, their accents, the clothing, the food, the air, everything except for those words in the Quran. They're the same words that I used to read as a child, and they're the same words, whether it's a Saudi-published Quran in Guantanamo. That was the only thing that was familiar to me. When I was reading the verses that Afia had underlined, I was trying to figure out what was going through her mind when she did underline those particular verses, and what that Quran must have, I know, have meant to her then, and indeed whatever Quran she has now must mean to her. It will be her only solace, I believe.
He wasn't going back to visit a graveyard of experience. He was going back and finding he could get through it, things to be done, he could do things, and it was all right. He sees his job to go into the future and try to sort things out. And it's an extraordinary thing.
We've endured a nightmarish experience that no human being should ever be put through. And the people who have done this, not only to Mosam and myself, but to the people who are doing this, the defenseless, innocent people around the world, should be brought to justice and tried for crimes against humanity.